hoodwinked, bamboozled. These are the words that Elizabeth Alexander, a poet, says will stop her 11 and 12-year-old boys in their tracks. And she'll suddenly get their attention and they'll say, "Wait, say that again?" They're words she calls that shimmer. What words shimmer for you? It might take a while to come up with them. You might want to do this as a practice. You know, journal a bunch of words that shimmer for you and start sprinkling them into your sentences and conversations and see how you might stop people in their tracks, get their attention in a whole new way. I think of words like bedazzled, majestic, luminescence, just to name a few. Recently, I was appreciating somebody for the good work that they had just done, some wonderful thing. I can't even remember specifically what it was, but I remember I used the word stellar, and they said, "Oh, I like that word, stellar." And somehow I knew that the appreciation was going to stick with them because the word shimmered for them, and they could shimmer all day with, "I did a stellar job." So it's thinking about those kinds of things that we can bring into our world that allow our world to shimmer. It might be as simple as love or peace, words we use all the time in New Thought, right? Harmony and joy. But when we say them with feeling, when we ground them in our hearts and we speak them from that place, they shimmer out into the world. They make a difference. They land where they need to land, resonate where they need to resonate. This is part two of our series, Becoming Wise. It's based on a book by Krista Tippett, who was a long time, I think still has, the program On Being through National Public Radio. And she talks about, in this second part of our series, the power of words. She talks about them as terms of raw materials to become wise, that words are part of the set of raw materials that allow us to become wise. There's five in the set, so if you want to know what the other four are, you'll need to come for the next 4 weeks. Or you can get the book across the way in the bookstore. She says this about words. The words we use shape how we understand ourselves, how we interpret the world, how we treat others. Words are living, breathing entities. Words create worlds. Now, we know this to be true in Unity's teachings. Our co-create life, our third principle, is all about the thoughts and the feelings that we hold. And if we give those expression, right, hopefully we'll choose wisely. Some of them don't, probably best not to be expressed. And some of them, oh, yeah, this will bring goodness into the world. This will prosper the world. This will uplift the world. This will bring the kind of world into being I want to be in. And so then we take the next step of creation and we clothe those thoughts and feelings in words. We bring them out in physical sound into the world, and that physical sound then shimmers and reverberates. If our words come from that place of spirit, from that deep well within us, from our very hearts. And so that is a key part of our teachings, and so too are the 12 powers, and one of them is the power of power located right here in the throat, in the vocal cords. And so we can remember that power as from the heart, as something bubbles up. We give it expression as it passes through the center of power, and we recognize the power, the impact that our words have. And we constantly have a choice of how we choose them, whether we're speaking them or writing them or singing them, it matters not. Maybe we're even silently sort of interpreting them through dance or painting or some other kind of expression. Words have power. Words like love, for example, hold so much power, yet love has so many different aspects and avenues and ways that we understand it. I looked up in Merriam-Webster's thesaurus to see some other words for love, and the first thing that came up was love is a verb, and the description was to treasure. And then there were other synonyms given to regard, to respect, to value, to revere. To love, then, is to regard, to respect, to value, to revere, to treasure. And when I think about those, it leads me to Johanna Macy's great turning, the era that we're in. Johanna Macy is a deep ecologist and spiritual teacher, and she says this era is the great turning. And in this great turning, we are turning from an industrial growth society to a life-sustaining one. We are turning with the idea and the learning curve, the very steep learning curve, evidently, that life is sacred. All life is sacred. While we go round and round this curve together, it's pretty dizzying, isn't it? A lot of times we end up doing quite the opposite when we are in a growth pattern. Have you noticed that? Have you noticed that when you set out to do something new, you commit to something new, sometimes it's like the opposite occurs, or it seems like there's an opposing force that the universe is just going, really? Are you sure? Is this the way? Yes, I'm committed to this way. And sometimes we see the opposite happens, not the honoring, the regard, the revering for life, but, you know, the destruction of life, the killing of life, no regard for life, none. It's a heartbreaking time. It's a heartbreaking time. There's no way around it. And we wouldn't want to go around it. Because if we try to go around the heartbreak, we won't learn anything. We won't grow. We'll just be sort of, you know, sliding over the surface into the next tragedy. And so it's that time that we allow ourselves to go into it, our hearts break open. The turn is rounded together. This time in the great turning, this curve that we're turning together, to me, feels a little bit like a ride, an amusement park. Have you ever been on a roller coaster and your stomach turns upside down? And maybe your face turns green? You know, we're not all on the ground in this experience, of course. It's much more devastating, of course, for those who are right there, right now, in Israel and Palestine and other places of conflict as well. But we all feel sick because we're in it together. We're making the turn together. We're on the roller coaster together. We're on that spinning rotor ride. I always hated that thing. And we all feel a little off kilter, off balance, surprised. We have those faces that, you know, like our faces are pulled by the gravity of the situation. Our hearts are pulled down by the somberness of what goes on. There's a place, you know, for Lamentations. It's a book in the Bible. Anybody ever read it? Not many have. Carl's the only one. Carol. It's one that gets skipped over a lot because it's not a lot of fun to read. It's not a great book to get through. Yet there are times when lamenting is exactly what is called for. There are times when the book is in there for a reason. And the book helps us see when we are filled with regret for the loss that we have caused, or filled with grief for the loss that has occurred. No sacredness of life here, only destruction. When will we wake up? Homo sapiens, you know, it means wise beings awaken. Don't you wish we could just all chant that loud enough and long enough and freely enough? Homo sapiens, wise beings awaken. You want to chant that with me? Homo sapiens, wise beings awaken. Homo sapiens, wise beings awaken. Homo sapiens, wise beings awaken. Through the power of our word, we may not think, I can't make much difference. We can. Because it speaks to the truth. It calls forth the truth. This is the truth of who, it's our namesake, right? We were created to be wise beings. We sure don't look very wise right now. But we are on the path of wisdom. We are learning and evolving every day. And those of us who can see a way that isn't yet being expressed, we can lead the way. You all in these seats right now, behind the camera, outside, are leaders. You may not see yourself as a leader. You may not think of yourself as a leader. But the world needs your leadership. The world needs you to be courageous enough to speak the truth. The world needs you to be courageous enough to find the shimmering words that will get people's attention. The world needs you to be able to clothe the thoughts and feelings, the keepers, the ones you want to put out into the world and co-create the world, and to give them over into the world through your poetry, through your songs, through your spoken words, through all the many expressions that the world longs to hear. My friend Cynthia always said that she would do sneaky prayers. I said, sneaky prayers? What are sneaky prayers? She said, it's when you don't say, let's pray. You just start praying. And you just start affirming. And so you start a conversation with somebody, and you begin to have this conversation, and you say something like, wow, your eyes are really beautiful. And as I'm looking into your eyes, it's just making me remember that we're all one. I don't even know you, and yet I can experience a sense of oneness when I look into your eyes. And then off you go. You don't know how that's going to land, but most likely it's not going to be like, oh no, please don't give me that blessing. Chances are it's going to be enriching and enhancing, and it's going to bring forth more of what we want. And so whatever that craft is that Spirit speaks through you and brings through you, it's time for us to burst through our self-consciousness, our smallness, our ideas of not enoughness, whatever that is. The world needs us to stand up, to stand on principle, to speak truth, to pray truth, to sing truth, to be truth, to give those words that allow us to grow and to become all that we want to be into the world. That's the raw material that is words that allows us to become wiser, just a little bit of it. Ecclesiastes says, for everything there is a season and a time for every matter. It's a time for grief. It's a time for sadness. It's a time for lamentation. So let's not just metaphysically, you know, skirt it. Because sometimes in our spiritual teachings, because we are a positive path for spiritual living, we can lean so far into the positivity that we forget the gravity. But the gravity is here. The somberness is here. The loss of life is here. The heartbreaking sadness is here. So let's be with it. Let's really let ourselves be with it. Move into it. Acknowledge the elephant in the room. Be with the elephant in the room. Let our tears flow. Let our hearts break open. The words then will arise out of the rubble. Healing words, resurrecting words, rising up words, rebuilding words. A new world order, a new humanity can arise out of that. Love to treasure, to revere, to allow what is to be sacred, life. Respect, regard, all of that comes with it. Walt Whitman wrote this poem during the Civil War about two veterans. It's called The Dirge for Two Veterans. It's unclear if the two veterans he speaks of are on the same side of the battle. I'm sure intentionally. I've adapted his poem for today for the Israelis and Palestinian people. It goes like this. Settle in. It's a longer one. And we'll have a little silence after if you need. The last sunbeam lightly falls from the finished Sabbath on the pavement here. And there beyond it is looking down a new made double grave. Lo, the moon ascending up from the east, the silvery round moon. Beautiful over the housetops, ghastly, phantom moon. Immense and silent moon. I see a sad procession, and I hear the sound of coming full-keyed bugles. All the channels of the city streets, they're flooding, all with voices and with tears. I hear the great drums pounding, and the small drums steady whirring, and every blow of the great convulsive drums strikes me through and through. For the Palestinian is brought with the Jew. In the fierce assault, they fall. Two drop together. And the double grave awaits them. Now nearer blow the bugles, and the drums strike more convulsive, and the daylight o'er the pavement quite has faded. And the strong dead march enwraps me. In the eastern sky, upbuoying, the sorrowful vast phantom moves illumined. To some mother's large transparent face in heaven brighter growing. O strong dead march, you please me. O moon immense with your silvery face, you soothe me. O my people twain, O my people passing to burial, what I have I also give you. The moon gives you light, and the bugles and the drums give you music. And my heart, O my people, my heart gives you love. In the 1940s, American Magazine featured Unity in a time of war. The article said that secret Unity services were held in many places in occupied Europe during the war. A GI in Africa wrote that he wrote home that he had heard tom-toms in the jungle. They were beating one night in the distance. And he was intrigued, so he followed the sound, and there he found a tribe. And that tribe was beating the drums, and with those drums, they were shouting affirmations straight from a Kansas City, Missouri service. Now, practically, that happened because Charles Fillmore had a radio broadcast that would land throughout Africa. And you know, outside of the United States, where the second most high amount of churches are Nigeria. And spiritually, though, that's cool physically, I mean, to think about that connection. But spiritually, those affirmations, prosperity affirmations, sung together and shouted together in the jungle around drums in the circle, got there through the ethers. They got there on the energetic beams of word that is spoken, of truth that is spoken and reverberates through the world and through the air. Prayers we speak here can be heard in Africa, can be heard in Israel and Palestine, can be heard in the Ukraine and Russia and wherever else we wish to send them. Our songs are felt and heard because they are felt here first, right, in each of our hearts. And in turn, the songs and the prayers and the psalms and the words of people all over the world are felt here too. We feel those reverberations. It makes a difference how we use our words. They travel. They have power. They have the ability to go past all boundaries, national boundaries, ethnic boundaries, racial boundaries, religious boundaries, whatever boundaries we decide to draw, because we are in love with those boundaries in humanity, aren't we? We are in love with categorizing. Even in the aftermath of all this carnage, the response, so disheartening. Dividing ourselves, Israeli and Jew. Which side do you stand on? Hamas, nobody stands there. But of course, which of those sides? Because everything has to be binary in our world. Well, Homo sapiens awaken. We are moving past the boundaries of binary. Male and female, black and white, Jew and Palestinian, Democrat and Republican, you know all the categories. We know them all too well. The ideologies that keep us stuck in our heads, in our egos, categorizing, dividing, moving each other into camps, demonizing one another with our words so that we can give permission to our bad behavior. No. No more. No more. No. No. That word has power. The power of renunciation behind it that says, enough, no, no more carnage, no more dividing, no more of this. We are part of one family. We are a human family sharing a spiritual home, Mother Earth, and it is the great turning time. It's a time for life. It's a time for the sustainability of life. It's a time for the sacredness of life. No, no, not on our watch. Not on these leaders' watch. No, more. And so, I imagine in Lamentations, when we are in the stage of Lamentations, no is an important word. And we give no lots of spaciousness, right? Let's be in the no for a while. And then at some point, yes, we'll pick up the yes. Let our words be true. Let our words come from the essence of our hearts. If right now it's righteous anger, and it's no, then let it be so. I can tell you, I am fed up. I am impatient. I feel like I can so relate to Jesus when he would be like, you hypocrites! Like, how much longer do I have to be with you all? Remember when he would say things like that to his disciples? It's just like, you guys aren't getting it. All this I'm pouring out of my heart, and you guys aren't getting it. Isn't that kind of the message we want to give over to the world? And then, okay, so we've said that, and then what? Then we pick up, right? We pick up where we left off, and we say, okay, I signed up for this. And I can be a part of the great turning. I can be the messenger of the sacredness of life. I can use my word, the power of my word, to shape the kind of world I want to live in, the kind of experience I want to have. I can be the example of how to treat others the way I want the world to treat each other. So it's not okay to come together and say our affirmative prayers and sing our songs and then go home and be mean to your spouse. No. Because you are not then using the word in a way that it was meant to be used for love, for harmony, for peace, for the kind of world we're co-creating. You see, in our personal lives, we choose over and over again, what will I say? What will I do? You want to run around and judge and criticize everyone, including yourself? Does that feed life? Does that bring sacredness into life? No. Deflates everyone. So that's not what we want to give into the world. Are we perfect? No, of course not. We're in the curve. It's dizzy in there. We feel a little sick sometimes. We're going to make messes and mistakes, of course. But the point is that our hearts are true. Our intentions are good. We're centered in spirit. And when we're centered in spirit, when we pause, when we take a moment to drop in first before speaking, then the truth comes forth from there. This past week, the region had a ministers and licensed Unity teachers gathering, and Unity's been talking about our identity and, you know, since the beginning, really 100 years ago in Dr. Emily Cady's book, they were talking about, almost 100 years ago anyway, is Unity Christian? They were talking about it way back then. It's in a chapter called Allness that's not in all the editions of the book. And so that was the question that we were sitting with, that we were going to talk about a little bit, because as we are in this new world, post-pandemic world, we really, really want to get this new thought message out. We really, really want to meet people's spiritual needs in the world, because they are many. We are starving, right, for this kind of community, this kind of truth together, this kind of support and inspiration and encouragement and comfort, for a place to come together and to feel that sense of camaraderie and to be reminded that we are leaders, to be reminded that we are divine beings, to be reminded that we came here by choice, that we have the power of free will, that we can use that power to choose a kind of trajectory of what we want to create in the world. It's not just a bunch of words, like empty words, but words that are based in principle and truth. And we long to have the world know about this wonderful thing we call unity. Not perfect, of course, but something to offer the world in these times. So in that spirit, the ministers and licensed teachers of our region gathered, and I was facilitating this listening circle. And I just asked Spirit right before, because the basic questions we were going to ask is, what is unity and is unity Christian? And I was sitting with Spirit, and I knew those questions wouldn't take us to the right place. And I said, give me the word, Spirit. Ask him about the essence of unity. Completely different in conversation, right? People opened their hearts, they told personal stories of their spiritual journeys and how they came into unity and what unity meant to them. We used words like universal and love and inclusivity and healing, and we all agreed on these things. We all agreed that Jesus was the master teacher that we follow. Nobody had an argument with the teachings of love and healing and inclusivity that he stands for. And that, yes, we draw from other master teachers too, but Jesus is good for all of us. We're all good with that. Christian, suddenly a divide. Some of us resonate, some not so much. Because we went into the binary, right? The ideology that divides. But when we went back down and somebody summed up the whole thing after all these wonderful stories and experience of heart-centered sharing, openness, and hearing one another from that place, even when things diverged. And then in the end, somebody said, you know, I think somebody just needs to listen to all that was said here, a really good marketing person, and then just put it out into the world. Take what's unified here. Take what's good here. Take what we stand on together, because it's a lot of good. And put that out so people can find us. More people can find us. Where do we go? Where do we go together? Prophetic words, poetic words, words that shimmer. You might think, well, I'm not charismatic. I am not a poet. I'm not a prophet. Well, think again. We all have a poet and a prophet within us. What is a prophet? I'm not talking about like somebody foretelling the future. I'm talking about the words that we speak that are true, that we stand on right here, that reverberate, that come up through our hearts and are spoken out into the world, that those words in this present time shape the future. That's prophecy. Words of truth shaping our future, co-creating our future, a force that goes out into the world and is made manifest as our reality, as our shared humanity, as our knowing that all life is sacred, and our actions that show that we know it, that we are one human family, only one of us here, and we are all divine. Be careful when you hear the words that demonize and otherize, because right out of those binaries that we think are maybe just for debates and fun intellectual exercises come that, I'm going to say, evil impulse that turns into demonizing people and excusing bad behavior. It's a scary thing going on in our world, but we can say no to it, and we start by stopping with all the categorizing. Gandhi was fabulous at it. I'm a Muslim, I'm a Jew, I'm a Christian. He clearly was Hindu from his culture, but he wouldn't stop there because his whole idea was, I'm a bridge, I'm one with you. And whatever we pick up, our religions, our politics, whatever, you know, clothes we wear in the world, it doesn't define us. It's not our essence. And the essence is where we find each other. The essence is where the heart lives. So Martin Luther King, you know, he didn't start his fabulous speech that we all quote all the time with, "I would like to lay out a Civil Rights Act proposal." Do you think he would have gotten our attention? No, he started with words that shimmer. "I have a dream. I have a dream." How many times have we repeated his words, listened to his words again and again through the ages? "I have a dream," because it stirs the heart. It brings forth the soul. It's like a prophetic truth. I have a dream too. I want to hear his dream. Do you have a dream? We all, oh, look, he's laying out a shared dream for all of us. A place where black and white children and brown children can sit together in school and they all have access to the same education. That's a dream we can get behind, isn't it? Why wouldn't we get behind that dream? Because we are shared humanity, because we are divine human beings, because we know the power of the word. When someone tells a story, when someone speaks shimmering words, when somebody brings forth their heart for us to see, lays bare their heart with their words, we all clamor to hear more. We want to hear those words over and over again. "I have a dream." And we fill them in with our own dreams, and we find that our dreams are shared. You are a prophet and a poet, because you have the power of the word, and the word shapes lives, shapes worlds. And we know which way we want to go, and we know when to say no. Is it true? Yeah. So let's breathe, let's ground in spirit, ask spirit to give you the words, make a prayer of your words, honor life with your words. Not too far away from where the battle of the soul of humanity is taking place right now in the Holy Lands is a place in present day that's called Turkey, where a Sufi poet named Rumi grew up. And he said these famous words, or wrote these famous words, "Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there." The field shimmers. The field glows. The field beckons and welcomes. That field is an inclusive field. It's a field where children run and play and laugh and have joy. It's a field of life and of sacredness. It's a place where elderly are treated with dignity. It's a place where all of the human shapes and forms and sizes and colors and beliefs come together. Out beyond the field of right doing and wrong doing, out beyond that, there is a field. It's a field of love. Can you hear my words starting to paint the picture? Because this is what we do with our words. In that field, there is a field of love. There is a feeling of love. There is a feeling of harmony. In that world, every hair on our head is honored. Every cell of our body is remembered as that creation that came from that proverbial utterance that began humanity long ago. We can remember who we are when we get out behind wrongdoing and rightdoing and meet each other in a field of love. So let's know it. Let's say it. Let's be wise beings, true Homo sapiens, by being honorable with our words, by speaking heart-centered words that unite. I invite you to say this with me. My heart-centered words unite and honor all life. And so it is.